This show's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. Next Wednesday, a week from today, March the 3rd, at the University of Illinois, there will be a recital for violin and piano by violinist Stefan Milenkovic of the University of Illinois faculty and the well-traveled pianist Rohan De Silva, who also works regularly with Hitzhak Perlman. They're going to be giving a recital of fairly popular violin showpieces by Wieniawski, several by Sarasate, Saint-Saëns, and more. And I have with me in the studio Stefan Milenkovic himself to play live, and also we'll sample some recordings of some famous old artists, well-known old violinists, departed. Well, no, not all departed. Sorry, Mr. Perlman, some of the pieces that will be on that program. So I hope you'll stay with us on Live and Local today on FM 90.9. My guest for this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9 is Stefan Milenkovic. He's associate professor of violin at the University of Illinois School of Music and has gotten a pretty good international name for himself as a soloist. And he is going to be performing with another internationally traveled performer, pianist Rohan De Silva, on Wednesday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, a wonderful recital of showpieces. And I'm pleased that Stefan was able to join us in the studio right now. Thanks very much.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you.
So you and Rohan De Silva have known each other for a good while.
For a long time. I think we met in maybe 93 or so. Yeah. And then we really became friends in 96 when I came to Aspen.
That's Aspen Music Festival in Colorado.
Yeah, Aspen Music Festival for a couple of months, actually. And, you know, we got to know each other better. We started playing together, and, you know, he's a great guy and great pianist. And I used to be in New York and live in New York, so we used to play together all the time. And now we still do. In fact, anytime I have a recital, I always ask him if he can do it first.
When you met in 93, were you just hearing him somewhere, or what were the circumstances?
Well, he played with so many violinists. I mean, he knew all the repertoire, and he actually used to study in London and be a double major. So he was a violinist first.
Oh, he was?
Yeah,
oh.
So, I mean, there is a sort of a supernatural ability that he has to be and accompany and perform with any violinist. So, and it's because he really knows the pieces. He played the pieces. And so, you know, that is a big plus. I heard him because he was also official pianist for quite a few competitions that I went to. And so that's how we met. He was also working for Dorothy DeLay at the time in her studio, playing for some of her students, and so it was all connected, and she was in the jury on some of these competitions. So it was kind of a circle, and we got to know each other and Ms. Delay, and it all came kind of together. You know, she invited me to come to the States, to Aspen, and we continued our friendship and then collaboration, and yeah.
And Dorothy Delay was at the, she taught at the Juilliard School. She passed away.
Yeah, she did a few years back, and but she was really one of the great teachers of all times, probably.
And was there for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah. She taught until, I think, she was 83 or 84 when she passed away, and she taught until the last day, and she drove herself from, you know, sort of a town close to New York City that's an hour away. She would drive every day, be there at noon and teach all day long, and then come back. And so she was a force to be reckoned with. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you were in New York until fairly recently. How long ago did you move here? I've forgotten.
Well, this is my third and a half year, so I've been here 3.5. Yeah. And but I mean, I have a lot of friends in New York. I play in a few chamber music series, and so I go there quite often. In fact, I'll see Rohan in New York this weekend because he's playing this weekend with Itzhak Perlman somewhere. And the only time we really have to rehearse is in New York. So I'm going on Thursday because I have concerts on Monday. But we figured, we found a little hole in the schedule to actually rehearse this program because we both arrived the night before the recital. And so there's really no time for us to rehearse here. So we're going to do it there.
The reason I asked in part about the New York connection. So, mm-hmm. So Dorothy Delay brought you to Juilliard.
Yes.
And you continued working there with some high school students or younger, isn't that right? In the prep program.
No, high school first. Actually, I started as her assistant. Basically, she said, "Okay, I'll give you 10 students to work 10 hours a week. It's some money." And I was considered a fellow of the institute. Basically, she had an institute within the Juilliard School. It was kind of an umbrella thing. And under this institute, I was teaching. So it was a little thing for some of her students to be introduced to teaching and to help her out, really. And so that's how I started. And then a few years after that, she introduced me to Mr. Perlman, and so he heard me, I had a few lessons with him, and then I was asked to teach in their summer camp, which is in Long Island. And then I proceeded to teach there for 5 years. In the meantime, then I was asked to help him at the Juilliard, becoming his assistant at the Juilliard. And then I started my own class. And when I started, basically I was teaching mostly pre-college, which I think is probably the most important age for formation for violinists, because, you know, we're talking about like 13, 14, 15, 16, and that's where you really get all the good habits, like of how you play the violin. Because I see often at the college level, kids come in and they have so many problems that needs to be fixed, and it's hard to do it later. It takes sometimes 3 years before they start using their body properly. And so teachers that teach at the pre-college level, even earlier sometimes, I think, that teach kids and set them up properly to play their instrument, that's probably the most important job. Because often, you know, at a college division, especially in some of the most reputable schools, you know, they come finished. They already are playing everything, and you don't have to do much with them. So the real work is earlier. And so that's what I did. I did a lot, and I enjoyed it greatly because that's you really are involved with them, and they're responsive, and they work hard, and they want to improve. So it's good times, yeah.
So with at the pre-college level, you do a lot of technical work, in other words.
That also, but it depends on the student, of course. But many of them are really great. They technically play already, but they're just open to even musically experimenting, and they work hard, and they will stick to a concept for a week or two or a month or two if necessary. So this kind of persistence you need really to achieve, because violin playing is complex, and there are a lot of different elements to it, and you know, it's technical aspect, it's musical aspect, it's also personality. It's also connecting your personality, whatever it is, to what you're doing with the instrument and expressing that through correct technical means. So all this has to come together, and each one of these requires dedication. So so in a way, it's work with everything. It's work with the person, not just the violinist.
I think I might ask you a little bit more about the teaching of things, since you are now a professor at the University of Illinois and have been for, what, 5-6 years? Longer than that?
Three and a half.
Just three. Okay. I was thinking you moved after you got here, but...
Ah, right. You know, no. I moved and started working.
And there it is. So. Okay. Well, then, 3.5 years. So some of the distinctions between working at the pre-college level, and as you said, and with college students here. But why don't we hear some music that you're going to be playing on the program? We're going to hear you play in a little bit live for us, but you have a recital of lots of show pieces. These are shorter show pieces that people, violinists often like to show off with, hence the characterization. Are there any of these that I've pulled some recordings for that you would think a younger player might tackle before some of the others?
You mean as far as level? Because I've it's hard to tell, because you know, I've seen 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds that can play any one of these amazingly. You know, some of the prodigies. I mean, I first played Carmen when I was 10 or 11. I wasn't a prodigy. I don't consider myself a prodigy. I never did, but I did play it. How? And if it was like flashy or with some understanding, yeah, that's relative. You know, I felt it then in my way. So, but I, you know, it's today you have a lot of kids that are really talented and they can play anything. I mean, just think of somebody like Sarah Cheng, who at a very young age she played like Paganini Concerto perfectly. And this is a huge piece, and she was tiny. You know, little girl, and playing everything, like, you know. So, so these pieces, you know, you have recordings here that I've seen. You know, Heifetz, Perlman. I mean, these are big names. Oistrakh. So these are some of the timeless works in a violin repertoire. And I'd like to say one thing is, you know, people sometimes ask, "What do you listen to? What kind of music do you listen to?" And I think that's a kind of a strange question, because I don't listen to a type of music or to a artist or to a group. I listen to any music that I like, any music that's good for me. And I've heard some great electronica, pop, rap, rock, hip-hop, jazz, you name it. I mean, new age, of course, classical. So this program is really about good music, and it's not about classical music, because the way I present recitals these days, last year I had about 30 concerts with a program that's very similar to that. It's very interactive, and the idea is to relax the whole atmosphere of the concert itself, and also to feel to make the audience feel like they are part of something, and that the artist sees them in the audience, and it's not like there is a curtain between the stage and the audience itself. And so the music doesn't need to change, it doesn't need to be improved, it's already fun and great. But I think the way the music is presented today, and that's a responsibility of the artists, it needs a lift, it needs to be rejuvenated. And so this format is very casual, music is timeless, it's fun, it's demanding, it's not cheap, so it's really about a good time and good music. And my goal is really to have as many people come to this concert that have never been to a classical music concert before, because I've been having, you know, a lot of comments exactly from people that never been to a concert, saying that this was just so much fun, and that they were reluctant to go because they thought it was going to be boring, because many classical music concerts, the way they're presented, they are dull, and it's very serious, and the atmosphere is very severe, And you know, it makes you uneasy. It feels like you don't know something, and you're required to have 10 university degrees to understand what's going on. And you know, I don't like that kind of feeling myself, the first person. So this is all about good time, good music, relaxed atmosphere, and just enjoyment.
Well, I can tell listeners with certainty that this will not be dull. I've seen you play once, in fact, in recital with Rohan da Silva, and worked with you twice with the Prairie Ensemble, music by Beethoven, and so I guarantee to anybody that in dull it will not be, in virtuosic it will be. Since you mentioned the Carmen fantasy of Sarasate as something you played when you were 10, here's a fellow who you have already mentioned who plays regularly with Rohan da Silva, and that is Itzhak Proman. And one of his renditions of the Carmen fantasy of Sarasate, here he's working with the New York Philharmonic, I believe, conducted by Zubin Mehta. And we're talking with Stefan Milenkovic on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was music by Pablo de Sarasate, his fantasy on themes from Georges Bizet's opera Carmen, many of which will be familiar to our listeners. And in this performance, the violinist was Itzhak Proman, Zubin Mehta leading the New York Philharmonic, and heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The reason we played it is sort of as a teaser for a recital you can hear next week at the Krannert Center, Wednesday, March 3rd. At 7:30, featuring Stefan Milenkovic, the violinist, and pianist Rohan da Silva. Mr. Milenkovic is a professor of violin at the University of Illinois, and Rohan is a frequent collaborator. And Stefan is here with us. He's going to play live in just a few minutes. And again, thanks for doing the show. What makes a good collaborator? I mean, you said that you hit it off really well with Rohan da Silva a long time ago, and you've stuck with him and you use him whenever you can.
Well, there are a lot of elements. I think first you have to be a great player of your own instrument. This is important also in, say, chamber music, for example, because if you have issues by yourself, you're unable really to pay attention to other people and what they're doing. So he's first and foremost a great pianist. And so he can really use all his sensibility to follow what the other person is doing, whether it's a violinist or a cellist sometimes. So, you know, that's the number one thing. Then experience also makes a big difference. I mean, he's been through probably everything ever written for violin and piano. And so he knows the repertoire, and he knows the not only his own part, but he also knows intimately the part of the violinist. And so he can really be there anytime for you. And in Rohan's case, I mean, he's amazing also because he was, as I said before, a double major back in London when he studied. So, you know, he was a violinist, and he knows violin, and he knows sort of the timing you need to do certain things perhaps, and the possibilities, and so these are all of the elements, you know. And also interest, it's something about the personality where you are willing to kind of be featured and in the same time know when to accommodate the other person as well. So you know, some people don't like that. Some have never played with another person. They just don't collaborate with others. They don't play chamber music. They like to stand in front of the orchestra or sit in front of the orchestra and sort of do their thing while everybody else is just following them. It's a matter of personality, but I think what really makes you all around a great musician is being able to interact with other human beings and not just do your own thing by yourself, because everybody that I've met or that I've admired in history, whether it's you know, specifically a violinist or just a great musician, pianist, they've all loved and played with others and, you know, chamber music. And that makes you that much more sensible, really. And that shows in your playing. So, you know, I think it's all these things. It's interest, it's background, it's experience, it's education, it's being proficient at your own instrument, all this.
I'm glad you used that term collaborator, because I remember when you and Stefan and Ani Aznavourian played the Beethoven Triple mm-hmm. with the Prairie Ensemble, I don't know, a couple years ago, was it, I think?
Last year, actually. Was it last year? Valentine's concert.
Was it last year already? Just about a year ago.
Time flies.
Just about a year ago. And did it? We did a chat beforehand for the audience, and I used the term accompanist, and mm-hmm. he sort of slapped me down and said, "We don't use that term because it implies." I mean, he didn't say it this way necessarily, but it implies that you're the, no pun intended here, but the second fiddle.
Right.
And he said, "A collaborative pianist or collaborative artist."
Yeah, I keep reminding myself not to say accompanist, you know, because that sounds like somebody who just follows orders and sits there and you slam the music in front of them and say, "You play this."
Well, and after all, the pianist has many more notes than the violinist or anybody else that they play with. You know, they've got huge parts to play.
Each instrument just has their own, you know, advantages.
They have their thing, yeah.
I still prefer violin. but the thing is, yeah, so that's like a little bit of, not a demeaning term, but it's a little more simplistic, you know, saying somebody's an accompanist because, you know, but collaborative because we, you know, sure, when it comes to, you know, things like show pieces, comparatively, pianist doesn't have so many notes. I mean, so, but the difficulty in actually playing with the violinist in those pieces, there is so much liberty, so much freedom in those pieces, so many ways of interpreting them, that, you know, sure, a pianist will have one chord or a note in a, while a violin is doing a big passage, but that one note has to be right on the right spot, and if it's not, it's very obvious. So it's, you know, being able to follow somebody well is not easy at all. So in he's just amazing in that. And of course, when you play sonatas, I mean, the parts are divided equally, and that's a different type of enjoyment. So either way, we have a good time. That's why we're still, you know, really together. I mean, we play together and we hang out together. He's just a fun guy. He's been around all over, really. I've been to actually Sri Lanka, believe it or not, a few times.
That's where he's from.
Yeah, that's where he's from, and just played benefit performances for a foundation there. So, you know, we just have a great relationship.
You mentioned having fun together and being really in sync with each other, and although we're not going to hear any of this music, I'll just mention when you did the last time you played together in Urbana at the university, you did, I think you ended with Ravel's Tzigane, and that's on this program as well. I think you said you do that regularly, and I just remember thinking that this was an astounding tour de force of collaboration, because once the pianist comes in, which is quite a while into it, it was just solo, the back and forth is incredible, and it was so tight, and it was so energetic, and it was so virtuosic. And I asked you later, and you said, "Oh, we were just kind of messing around. We know each other so well that we sort of make." I think you said something about almost make a game out of seeing who can throw the other off,
yeah,
or something like that.
Because it's basically impossible. Like, there's nothing he can do that can really surprise me in terms of, not because I know what he's going to do, but because I'm just alert. And same with him. He's there no matter, and so it's really, you know, sort of make as we go along process. Of course, we rehearse, although these rehearsals are minimal at this point, because even if we didn't play the pieces, you know, we both know them, know these pieces, and you know, it comes together really fast. But then it's just total freedom. Basically, this is what this relationship is about, and why is it so really enjoyable, is because I can do whatever I want and he'll be there, and he can do whatever he wants and he'll be there. So you feel artistically free, and I love that.
Let's hear a little bit of from another long ago great artist, great violinist, in one of the pieces that's going to be on your program, and that's Yasha Heifetz. This is from the 1930s, 1935. It's the introduction in Rondo Capriccioso of Camille Saint-Saëns. Anything in particular that, you know, what made you put this particular piece on the program?
This particular, well, it was just one of those great pieces, very recognizable, lots of fun. I believe it was dedicated to Sarasate. And that's another, composer, violinist on the program. So it's related in that way. But it's just, it's so much fun. It's timeless. And when I was looking at, you know, what are those most famous pieces for violin repertoire, that was one of them. So.
Okay, Yasha Heifetz here with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by John Barbarelli. 1935, March of 1935, Yasha Heifetz, the soloist, intro in Rondo Capriccioso of Saint-Saëns, heard on Live and Local during our conversation with Stefan Milenkovic on FM 90.9. Music by Camille Saint-Saëns, his introduction in Rondo Capriccioso, with violinist Yasha Heifetz, playing in 1935 with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Sir John Barbarelli. That is one of the numerous showpieces that will be on a recital played by violinist Stefan Milenkovic of the University of Illinois faculty and his frequent collaborator, pianist Rohan da Silva, next Wednesday, March 3rd at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And as Stefan mentioned, dedicated to Pablo de Sarasate, and there's a number of Sarasate's works on the program as well. We've promised people that you will actually pick up your violin and play, since you brought it here to our studio.
I brought it, yeah, by accident. But now I will play something. No, I thought actually, since the program is very virtuosistic, actually Rohan is not here. I mean, he's only arriving. We're both arriving from New York the day before the concert. I'll just play some Bach. I think that's something that you can never have enough of. And I'll do a couple of movements from Partita number 2 in D minor. So I'll do the Allemande and Jig. So let's do it.
Stefan Milenkovic, live in the studio on Live and Local, appropriately titled for this particular day on FM 90.9. Music by Bach here on Live and Local, played live in our studio, Stefan Milankovic. And remind us again, which pieces were those?
Well, it's there are two movements from Partita number 2 in D minor for violin solo, Allemande and Jig. So, and I'm ready to take off my jacket now. Now I'm warmed up.
Yeah, I bet you are warmed up. It's not exactly cool in the studio right now. And, you know, I was just thinking, while you were playing, of kind of an analogy to the Olympics. I don't know if you are watch the Olympics at all, which are going on right now, the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. But I was thinking about the ice skaters. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were doing ice dancing last night, and the commentators were saying that all of the ones who had gone in the last five were really giving their very, very best. And you know, you never know when you get to a performance. Mm-hmm. In that case,
right.
Whether you will really go for it or play it safe or, you know, make mistakes or whatever, but whatever you do, you have to believe in somehow or another. And they all really did that. And somehow just thinking about that while you were playing, that there's got to be some parallels in the mentality for a musical performer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, well, as you know, actually, I think I mentioned it at our first concert together with the Prairie Ensemble. In my free time, I'm a skydiver, so I jump out of planes. I have about 150 jumps so far, which is a lot, and it's not a lot, you know, comparing to 6,000, 10,000 that my instructors will have. But, you know, so I look at it after all the preparation, after all the, mental fitness you have, and an attitude. Once you're out of that door, you're out of the door. And in a performance, in a way, it's the same. You know, once you start playing, everything that you've done until that moment really should kick in, and you should really do your best. So I look at it that way. And, you know, your best in this moment might not be your best tomorrow or your best 2 years ago. It can change. It does change depending on the, you know, a lot of factors. But I think one thing you should always be able to deliver is that you go for it. And that's what I try to do. So regardless of preparation, regardless of the difficulty of the program, I try not to ever tighten up in front of any challenge and rather just go head on. That way, you know, looking back, sometimes everything works out. Sometimes you miss a note or two. These things happen. But I never want to look back and say, I didn't really give my best. I didn't give it all. That I won't always be able to say I gave it my all, and then, you know, whatever happens, happens. And sometimes everything works out, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't. But that's sort of part of the really of this profession and the nature of being a human being, and you know, the idea of perfection and what it actually means, and sort of a level of acceptance that you have toward your own performing without losing track of quality itself. Because, you know, I know people that are very tolerant toward what they're doing, but they start losing track of actual quality, and so it doesn't matter anymore what comes out. I think finding the line between caring and on the other hand not worrying is the key. Then you can really, you know, kind of ensure the quality and not be stressed out in the process, basically.
Well, excuse me, I know you have to run off and teach a lesson because you're headed off to New York in a day or two to do some performing and practicing there, as you said. And so I just wanted one question regarding the teaching, because I said earlier that I wanted to ask something about the college teaching. Thinking about Bach, which you just played, I assume that you teach Bach fairly often in your lessons.
Yes, because it's one of those composers, first of all, wrote so much and wrote masterpieces for violin. But also, you know, you can give it to a student and you can give it to a greatest artist ever. And they will play their own way, and you can really use it as a tool, really, for students. So, for example, there have been many students that play this Allemande. And so Bach will really jumpstart you into, I think, becoming your own artist, meaning, you know, you have to start deciding what you want to do with your music. What do you want to do with your sound? It's technically demanding, but it's also demanding to memorize, for example. But it's also demanding to sort of envision it musically. And so this is a great sort of great asset for anybody. So yes, I do teach it quite frequently, and I play it myself. I love Bach, so I can, like, if I were condemned to one composer for the rest of my life, you know, somebody said, okay, you will play only this composer, and they said you'll only play Bach, I think that'll be fine.
So that would not be a condemnation.
That would not be a condemnation. Any other composer, probably I could get tired of at some point, but Bach, no.
Well, and I would think one of the reasons that it's so good for interpreting, although even that it may be difficult technically, mm-hmm. it also, a lot of Bach can be managed by many people.
Right.
But there's still, he just writes the notes on the page and they don't tell you in any obvious way how to interpret them.
Exactly. That's why it's kind of a blank slate full of, like, it's a universe of possibilities, that kind of blank slate. So, but I tell my students, actually, in Bach, you can do whatever you want. Because, you know, every single teacher in this world will, you know how to play Bach, and they will know how to teach Bach, and they will know what they want to express with. And they're all so different that bottom line is, you can do whatever you want. And of course, when you say this to a student, that's probably the most scary thing you can ever tell them. You decide. You do whatever you want. Because now, you know, the question is, what do you want? And all of a sudden, they realize, like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this piece? So it's a part of the process. But seriously, my Bach is like a hybrid of all kind of things. So I can't even describe my style. I just play the way I feel it at any given moment. That's pretty much it.
So you need to know what you want. And when you have to start asking that question, that's when you start becoming an artist.
Yeah. And I say, you know, don't be afraid of your ideas. And I say this, I believe in this. Because, you know, you got to be convinced in what you're doing. And first to have something that you want to do. And then be convinced about it. And, you know, people can say, well, I like or I don't like this interpretation or whatever of any piece. Any composer, but they can never doubt your dedication to your own interpretation. And that's it. You know, then it's a matter of style. And I know people that these few, of course, great violins that you've played before, people that think Heifetz is god of violin, and others that don't like Heifetz, they will prefer Oistrakh, and some that prefer Perlman, and they like that approach, and they're all great. It really is a matter of style in the end, but all of them have their strong imprint on whatever they're doing. So you want to hear Zigeuner Weisner, you want to hear Carmen Fantasy, but you also want to hear Perlman in it. Each one of us has a lot of experiences in life and emotions, but it's how you harvest them when you need them. That's the difference. How you access them, you know, without overindulging or feeling ashamed. You're supposed to bare your soul in front of, you know, thousands and sometimes millions of people in some broadcast. And to do that all so it looks organic and it's not weird or artificial. So it all comes together. That's why, you know, people actually pay a ticket to go to hear somebody live, because this is not easy. Not everybody can really do it well. And then to get over the fact that you're actually playing an instrument, you're not just standing there, that's difficult. So, you know, all these things to come together, that's why it's not really easy. And to be an artist and to be a violinist specifically, I think that's why Perlman said, you know, if you are, say, 15, you still play your instrument well, he says it's a bloody miracle. Those are his words. And, you know, it's true. So many things can go wrong.
But play with no regrets.
But no regrets. That's why, you know, one shouldn't worry about it at all. Just do your best.
And you will hear Stefan Milenkovic do exactly that with Rohan da Silva next Wednesday, March 3rd, 7:30, at the Krannert Center in Urbana, in recital of lots of show pieces. And since you mentioned David Oistrakh, as it happened, I thought we'd go out with one of the pieces that's on your program, and one of my favorites that's on your program, as a matter of fact, The Legend of Henryk Wieniawski. David Oistrakh, this is the one that is, in fact, with piano. The others we played are with orchestra. The pianist here, Vladimir Yampolsky, from late 1950s. And I want to say thank you to you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
And I'm sure we'll have occasion to do it again. Stefan Milenkovic on Live and Local on FM 90.9.